From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of August, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net in Normal, Illinois. We'll hear from Frayne Olson, agricultural economist at North Dakota State University. With Extensionaire, I talked with him earlier today about last night's social media post from President Trump as it's related to China and soybeans and the ag trade agreements as well. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at 385, finished 2.25 higher. December at 407.75, the settlement price also up 2.25, and the March 2.25 higher. It settled at $4.52.25. September beans up 24 cents at $9.91.75. November at $10.11.25, 23.75 higher. In January, up 23 cents at $10.29.5. Bean meal, $4.20 higher. The bean oil, up 48 cents. Wheat futures, a half cent higher at 5.15 in the September. December, up a half at 5.35.5. That for the soft red. The hard red, December, at 5.37.5, a quarter of a cent higher. Live cattle futures at 2.26.10, 12.5 cents higher. Feeder cattle, up 22.5 cents at $340.60 per 100 pounds. And lean hogs at $91.77.5, $1.10 higher. Crude oil, $64.07 a barrel, about 19 cents higher. The wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB today at $2.07.7. That's just about 8 hundredths lower, so just about unchanged. And diesel fuel at $2.29.3, a penny and 0.3 cents higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands 200 points lower, and the S&P 500 is down about 7.75 points. Now here to talk about these numbers is Kurt Kimmel. He is with agmarket.net in Normal, Illinois. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us again.
Glad to be here again, Todd. Thank you much.
And tell me why it was, and I think it's pretty clear, but why it was that soybeans managed to jump in the overnight and day trade?
Yeah, basically we're subject to overnight news or, post on social media. President Trump came out and stated that China needs soybeans and hopes China will quickly quadruple its soybean orders. And it's hard to quadruple, as one person said earlier this morning, it's hard to quadruple when the number is zero here at the moment on new crop beans. So it's whoever came up with that was quick thinking this morning. But also, too, that type of request is just physically impossible to achieve. But the AI programs, computers, gave that reason to go with it for right now. And maybe some optimism, something could happen here. So we'll see what type of news we run into as we move forward. Now, that pushed the beans up to some downtrend lines that the market's been running into ever since we made the high back there, this last high back in mid-June there. So November beans back to that downtrend line is going to run into some resistance. We can close above that reach downtrend line. Maybe we can get something going. We did close above the 10 and 20 day moving average. Maybe we can have a little short covering, but for the most part, the market's kind of waiting to see what the report shows tomorrow, 11 a.m. time.
And the crop production and the WASD figures are both due out tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see what the World Agricultural Outlook Board does with the soybean and corn S&D tables, particularly as it's related to exports. And then also what crop production numbers come out of USDA NASS. They do survey farmers for this one and do a lot of satellite surveying as well. What are you and the rest of the trade thinking?
Well, on the production, that's probably going to get the spotlight here. The ag market team's got the corn yield 184.8. I believe the average gas is 184.3. So we're just about a little above average gas. That's up about 3.5 bushel from last month. On the soybean yield, average trade guess is 53 bushels. We're staying unchanged at 52.5, just going with the idea the beans still have some time here to develop for the most part. One thing that analysts just are not touching, and it's the huge unknown, is the demand side of the equation, particularly exports, on particularly even beans. So that's going to be the unknown. I don't believe they're going to touch that one until we get more into the marketing season and kind of see how the sales go for the most part. But on the demand side, the old crop still is a big deal. We shipped out on the shipments almost 1.5 million metric tons of corn, 581,000 beans, and wheat was a little at the low end at 365, but we continue to sell and ship out. And the key here in the next couple of reports on shipments is as we wrap up the marketing year to meet the USDA outlook on exports. So that will kind of wrap up the old crop, but most of the focus is going to be on the new crop. We went through a period of worrying about corn on fungicide. Now we're going to be worrying about what the crop reports show here as we move forward. But we can worry about this, we can worry about that. But what the trump card, what we're busy doing is visiting with producers on what to do with the new crop that's going to be harvested here fairly shortly here in the Midwest, just due to the fact that a lot of us have been drinking the drought Kool-Aid earlier, hoping that we'd see a rally. It did not happen. So there's going to be a lot of grain for sale here this new year.
Yeah, so what do you tell producers? And you'll need to make it short for me.
We basically, on the corn, 415, make a cash sale before basis gets wide. Then we replace it with some call strategies so we can try to recoup a little bit to the upside and through here. It varies from individual to individual. Those bushels need to probably be looked at for off-farm storage. On-farm storage, look for the carry opportunity there, Todd.
All right. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always check it out again online and listen to the whole thing at WILLAG.org anytime you'd like, on demand. Just a quick reminder that the Illinois State Fair is underway in Springfield. It runs through Sunday. If you have the opportunity, visit the fairgrounds there on Sangamon Avenue all this week. It's a really fun thing to go do. The Sale of Champions starts at 4:30 on Wednesday afternoon in the Coliseum. The other item I'd like you to consider is visiting our website at willag.org, where you will find information about the MRTN. That's the maximum rate to nitrogen and returns. There was a webinar last week with Gary Schnitke and Laura Gentry, also from the Illinois Corn Growers Association and the U of I, talking about what they've found across hundreds of thousands of acres in the Midwest, particularly in Illinois, and what nitrogen rates and timings work best. Have you considered changing your timings and, or more importantly, how much nitrogen you apply? You might take some time to watch the webinar. That's at willag.org. We're now joined by Frayne Olson, agricultural economist from North Dakota State University with Extension there. Frayne, thanks much for being with us. I bet you're looking forward to having students back on campus by the end of the month.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I mean, I don't teach any class in the spring semester, but it's really good to have all the students back on campus and have a lot more activity. It gets pretty quiet during the summer.
Indeed, however, was not quiet in the marketplace last night as President Trump, through his Truth Social account, called on China to quadruple its import of U.S. soybeans. That would take everything they import for a year and move it all to the United States. Seems really unlikely to happen. However, it does bring me to the question of how you've been watching the trade agreements that he has been working through, particularly with China, and what those might mean over the long and short terms.
Yeah, and that's a really great question, and it's something that during the summer meetings that I've had that we spend some time talking about. So really the grain markets have been watching the trade and trade negotiations very closely. Don't misunderstand, you know, that it doesn't seem like, you know, to a lot of observers that the grain markets are really paying much attention. They are, it's just kind of in the background. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First, most of the big issues and the questions that are being raised in the trade agreements are these frameworks. Are not directly related to ag. They're worried about some of the other products, and in particular the level of trade between U.S. versus these other countries. So we're looking at the trade deficit, and what are we buying from them versus what are they buying from us? Okay, so a lot of the discussions also have been in providing what they call frameworks for trade agreements. So the negotiations, when President Trump says we have a deal with, let's say, the EU, the European Union, or the UK, the British, those are really frameworks, meaning that they have agreed on the structure of the agreement, what the higher level priorities are going to be, and in particular some of those areas that are of greatest dispute or greatest kind of disagreements on. But we still have to put that into writing, and so there's still a lot of work ahead of us to be able to get the details, to put all of those specifics into an agreement that both parties can sign, that we can actually use as the formal agreement. The other thing then is that we have been talking about what the U.S. is going to put tariffs on for products coming into the U.S., not necessarily what those countries are doing for retaliation. And with the exception of a few examples, most of the countries that we're negotiating with have not retaliated, meaning that they have not put other tariffs on U.S. products. Okay, and that includes ag products, which is really good. However, one of my big concerns moving forward is, okay, it's going to take us a while to get these frameworks into real trade agreements so we all understand the nuts and bolts of how this is going to work, the details of how we're going to implement this. If we have the large crop production that we do in the United States, you know, based off of the industry estimates for the forecast for the WASDE report coming out tomorrow, on the heels of a very large Brazilian crop, large soybean, large corn production, a lot of competition in the global marketplace, you know, it looks as though our ending stocks, our inventories are going to start to build. And so the question I get all the time is, well, if we have these low prices, because we have this big production and the big inventory, how quickly can we, how long will these low prices last? I get the question from ag lenders. I get the question from farm managers saying, well, how do we put a plan together, a marketing plan together in this environment? And the short answer really is the length of time really depends upon how quickly we can export our way out of these extra stocks. If we have to rely on domestic consumption only, if we have big reserves and we're going to have to chew our way through this through domestic consumption, we can do that, but it's going to take some time. Okay, the only market that I know of that's big enough and deep enough and large enough to be able to chew up at large volumes of U.S. grain quickly to be able to get more of a price recovery faster is to export the products. Okay, so the follow-up question then is, who's going to buy those products? Which countries are going to step up and say, oh, this is a great deal, I'm going to buy more U.S. ag products? And I think there's interest in doing that. The concern I have, or the question that's being asked, is, well, if we buy from the U.S., are they going to be, by the time it arrives, are we going to have additional problems? So usually international buyers are thinking anywhere from 3 to 6 months forward in their purchases. So they're buying today for delivery sometime in the future. Okay, which is very common because of the time lags and the delays. Well, as an international buyer, you know, what is the risk of buying from the United States with a potential shifting in trade policy, not only for the US, but more importantly for the country that I have, the country that I'm operating in, versus trading with someone, a company, or buying my product from another country. So there's, in my sense, I guess what I'm sensing in the marketplace now, in particular internationally, is that there's a risk premium, or it's sometimes a risk discount, if you will, on U.S. ag products because of this unknown, this uncertainty about, are we going to be able to, I mean, is there going to be additional trade disputes coming up between the time I buy my grain from the U.S. and it's actually delivered to me in my home country? So there's some short-term issues that I think we still have to work through. I'm a little concerned about that. We'll have to watch to see how this plays out. And then the follow-on is, well, long-term, is going to be some long-term damage to demand. Is there going to be, is the U.S. going to be considered a, not the first choice or the first call that I make, but might be the second or third or fourth call that I make? And we won't know that, obviously. That's something we're going to have to wait over time, how these trade agreements are finalized and what the fine print actually looks like, and how these other countries are going to, you know, either retaliate or not retaliate. How are they going to respond to this new trade environment? You know, those are still really, really big questions, well above my pay grade.
So it is about the reliability of the United States as a trade partner?
It really is. And again, if you think about it as a buyer, you know, again, yes, it's price, it's quality, is the product going to be delivered to me on time? Am I going to get what I ordered? But then the other part of that is, well, this uncertainty, this unknown about, well, will there be some new trade dispute that shows up, you know, in 2 or 3 weeks that I don't anticipate? And that could be either from the United States in the U.S. position, or it could potentially be for the political position within my home country. You know, again, just because things have stabilized, it looks like it's starting to become more calm, doesn't mean there can't be hiccups or problems later on. So I do think this higher level of anxiety about, well, what will this tariff structure really look like, is playing a role. I think there are countries that are a bit more cautious in trying to buy, in particular, large volumes of grain from the U.S.
Is there any indication the countries are concerned that the trade agreements being penned by the Trump administration need to be approved by Congress?
So there's another layer of uncertainty, right? I mean, there's another layer of complexity to this. And I guess there's still, even in today, the within the legal system, you know, people are still challenging to say, well, does President Trump have the authority to be able to do to implement or to even authorize the tariffs that are currently in place? Because as President Trump has said, there's going to be a 10% import tariff on all products. All right, from there we go country by country by country and say, well, some countries are going to be higher than that and other countries will be at that base of 10. You know, does he have the authority to even do that to begin with? And that's obviously a legal debate, again, well above and beyond my knowledge base, but it is something that it is a concern. So are the provisions that allow the president power to unilaterally put on tariffs, is that extended? Does the existing laws, does he qualify to be able to use this in this way? And again, those are legal discussions well beyond what I know.
Thank you much. I appreciate it, Frank.
Yeah, it's always good to visit. I know this is a lot of moving parts. It gets to be very complex, but you know, we still have to try and understand it and make decisions.
Frank Olson is an agricultural economist with North Dakota State University Extension and located on campus in Fargo. Let's check out the global growing regions now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us again on a Monday.
Hello, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Can you take a look back at last week? There were some strong winds. I don't think quite a derecho, but strong winds in northwestern part of the Corn Belt. Did it do very much damage?
Yeah, we didn't think there was too much impact here, at least anything that widespread. Some localized severe wind gusts above like 70 or even 80 miles per hour, but again, very localized. You know, that normally happens almost every season. The biggest concern would be if you have a large scale derecho where you have a large area of those severe wind gusts. And of course, the classic example is back 5 years ago. And, since then, there hasn't been, anything since that, not even close.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, the length on that one was as much of a problem as anything, 40 or 50 miles wide and 8 hours, 100 mile an hour winds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Can you turn your attention now to next week and what the weather might be like?
Yeah, we continue to see favorable weather here across much of the Midwest, not only this week, but over the next few weeks. The eastern Midwest will have near to below normal rainfall, while the western belt has near to above normal rainfall. And from a temperature standpoint, readings are still going to be warmer than normal, especially over the next 10 days before there's a cool down back to more seasonal levels. But even with the current warmth, we don't expect that to lead to any kind of crop stress with corn crop going through kernel filling stage and beans going through pod development. That should continue to be favorable because the heat is just not extreme.
Are there places across North America you're keeping an eye on?
Well, across the northern plains and even up into Canada, they're in a pretty wet pattern, which for the timing now of these rains, starting to become more problematic than beneficial as crops are maturing and harvest is beginning to accelerate for like spring wheat and canola. So that's an area to keep an eye on. And then we also are keeping an eye on the tropics, which as always this time of year, that can become a wild card in the pattern. And at least over the next week to 10 days, we don't see any tropical impacts on the U.S. We do have a newly developed tropical storm, Erin, which likely is going to recurve and stay off the East Coast, but it is something to monitor, as is, again, always watching the tropics at this time of year.
Now turn your attention to Europe and the Northern Hemisphere crops there.
Yeah, across Europe, we're seeing another major heat wave build into Europe, which is going to continue for the next week to 10 days, and then also a suppressed rainfall pattern returning to much of Europe. And this is a pattern seen very similar as back in June. And so, after the relief of July from a rainfall and temperature standpoint, Europe is going right back into the hot, dry mode, which is stressing late developing summer crops. And certainly they avoided a crop disaster this year because of July's weather, but still lower production here due to what's been a roller coaster ride of weather this season.
Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world online at WILLAG.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.